Sona.
I locked my arms tighter around Eris's neck, pulling my legs up around his waist. The hand on my thigh helped automatically, slipping further down near my ass to hold me up. He stopped walking, his chest rumbling again. This time, it wasn't a laugh. It was a growl. I was wrenched away from his body suddenly, passed into another set of arms. I wasn't even sure if I had been stolen, or if Eris had handed me off.
Not a good idea, Rox, pushing a guy with a seduction gift.
Cohen's voice shot through me, pooling heat into places that heat had no right pooling into. Okay, what the hell was going on?
He's a big boy, I grumbled. He can handle it.
That was probably the truth, but it wasn't really the issue in that moment. The issue was, could I handle it? Chapter 10. I was trying to ignore a very big problem. It took us another sun cycle to get back to Blesswood, and in that time, there was always one of the Abkurst brothers by my side. Usually, it was because they were carrying me, since it was faster to travel that way and they wouldn't need to stop for too many breaks. I had ventured off on my own for a few clicks, though. We had stopped for a few rotations to rest, and I had been busting for the bathroom again. Since all hell had broken loose the last time I had been busting for the bathroom, I was understandably wary as I made my way through the trees, trying to find a private spot. The problem was, the further I traveled, the more my chest began to throb. Very soon, it was too painful for me to go any further. The pain wasn't as bad as it had been the previous sun cycle, but as soon as I finished my business and made my way back to the others, it lessened. When I touched one of them, resting my arm on Sirit's, as I curled back onto the ground, it disappeared completely. I stored that information away, turning it over and over in my mind. I didn't want to tell them, on the off chance that they used it against me. But the need to say something was becoming increasingly more and more urgent as we fought through the trees back into Blesswood. It went completely against my nature not to push out of Cohen's arms and stalk away from them. I wanted to find Emmy and get my lecture out of the way before delivering myself to the healer. If dwellers were even allowed to see the Blesswood healers. But I couldn't because I knew on some level that the pain of being away from them would cripple me. Which definitely was not normal. That went beyond the bond formed by people who saved each other's lives. That had everything to do with Raoul and his creepy smoke ball of light. Still, Cohen apparently knew me well enough to know that the normal me would soon demand to be set on her feet, and so he let me down. I ignored the small pinch in my chest and started to stride ahead of them. It didn't last long because my dweller legs were super short. They had overtaken me in about 3 clicks, and then I was jogging to keep up with them. We passed into the back building of Blesswood, the Abkurses barging past the other souls as though they owned the whole property, and me hurrying to dodge the stunned people who turned to watch them go. I didn't even know where they were going, so it surprised me that they burst right into the dining hall. It was completely empty, but the kitchens were bustling with activity, so it must have been close to dinner time. They sat around their table, and I hovered behind, absolutely despising this new dynamic where I was just forced to follow them around like a lost little cub. Sirit noticed me still standing there and moved over a seat, holding out the chair between him and Eris. I shook my head. He reached over to me, gripping my forearm and dragging me into the chair. I landed heavily, a sighing grumble sounding in the back of my throat. I needed to convince one of them to take me to a healer. Something needed to be done about this forced codependency.
"You going to enroll me in classes, too?" I asked Sirit, my tone dry and slightly annoyed.
He smirked, turning on me.
"What, you don't want to be one of us, Dirt Dweller?"
I scowled, narrowing my eyes at him.
"No."
"Yes." He shook his head at me.
"Make up your mind."
I said no.
"You also said yes."
"No, I didn't." Eris leaned over, his breath against my cheek.
"You did," he confirmed. "But it's okay. You're one of us now. We said we'd protect you if you stole us the cup, and now we will. You becoming an Abkurs is the only way that's going to happen."
"What?" I turned on him, and then on the others. None of them looked shocked. Maybe they had discussed it while I slept. "Are you going to adopt me?" I screeched. Cohen leapt out of his chair, looking disgusted. A few mouths dropped open.
What?
Choked Sirit. Am I supposed to be your sister? I was still speaking in that voice that was part screech. Are your parents going to adopt me? Are you going to marry me? Isn't that illegal? No, wait. It's just procreation between souls and dwellers that's illegal. I remember now, Emmy told me. I was clearly rambling at this point, but I couldn't stop myself. So I guess technically marriage is legal, but I don't want to get married. I'm too young to get married. I still need to learn how to cook and I...
Calm down.
Yale's voice washed over me, stealing the bubble of words from my mouth.
Sit down.
I looked down at my chair. I hadn't even realized that I jumped out of it. Had it been when Cohen jumped out of his? Maybe I had reflexively copied him, which was weird. I sank back down.
Take a deep breath, Willa,
Yale continued, the smallest of smiles spreading across his face.
There's no way in hell that you're going to be related to us.
He paused, meeting Cohen's stare. Cohen had arched a brow at him. He turned back to me, his expression darkening.
Because you're a dweller,
he needlessly added.
But you are going to stick with us from now on, and we will protect you. We will send a message to this academy that anyone messing with you is messing with us.
I nodded, my eyes falling to the table. That could work. It could also help with the pain I felt whenever they weren't near me. But what would happen when classes ended for the Sun Cycle and everyone went back to their dorms? I would still need to be near them. The realization hit me with a heavy, sickening clarity.
Shit.
Shit! I can't sleep alone!
Why not?
Sirit blinked at me, forcing me to reel in my thoughts. What? Either I had lost my damned mind or I kept accidentally saying my thoughts out loud.
Why can't you sleep alone?
Okay, maybe both. I had lost my mind and I kept speaking my thoughts out loud. But I knew I hadn't actually said that last part out loud. There was no way unless... I'm scared, I lied, trying to deflect. Rome was suddenly in my face, and all air seemed to be sucked from the vicinity of my lungs.
What aren't you telling us?
He demanded, his eyes narrowing.
There's something.
Damn, triple damn. I couldn't hide things from them now. Apparently, I was not only required to be attached at the hip with the five of them, but they could also hear my thoughts. Some of my thoughts. I was pretty sure that was what was happening. But how? Yale is a competitive bastard. I directed that thought as loudly as I could, and sure enough, darkness descended over his features. Before he could react, though, Sirit spoke.
You didn't move your lips. We all heard you say that, but you didn't fucking speak.
I swallowed, my breath shallow as it rushed in and out of my mouth. Apparently, you five can read some of my thoughts now. There might not have been many other souls in the room with us, but it seemed that right then, silence reigned through the entire dining space. The Abcurses just stared at me, not moving or blinking until finally, Eris's hand landed on my shoulder, demanding my attention. His golden eyes had turned a dark bronze color.
How is that even possible? He asked. Rao's power doesn't work like that. He can't have done this. Can you hear our thoughts?
As if they just wondered the same thing, Yale, Sirit, and Cohen were on their feet in an instant, their fury now crowding the space. Damn the stupid gods. I wished I could run away from all the crazy right now. How far would I get before the pain killed me? It was probably an experiment I would have to try very soon. Since none of them were sitting back down, I decided to put them out of their misery. I can't hear your thoughts. This seems to be a one-way thing, and it doesn't appear that you're hearing everything from me either. Otherwise, you'd all have clicked on ages ago that something weird was happening. Cohen smirked.
Doubtful, Rox. Something tells me there isn't a lot going on up in that mind. And around you, something weird is always happening.
Screw you, asshole. His mouth dropped slightly, and now it was time for a smirk to cross my face. Before he could form any kind of reply, Rome shoved his twin.
Get a grip, he demanded roughly. You are acting like an asshole. We're wasting time and energy. We should be figuring out what happened to her. What did Rao hit her with?
I slumped back into my chair, burying my head in my hands as I tried to sort through the mass of emotions and thoughts I had going on.
Dweller!
I knew I should react, The feminine voice held a harsh bark of command, but I was so tired that I could barely lift my face again. By the time I did, there were three of them. The Dweller Relations Committee. Elowyn stood with her usual grace and perfection. Her willowy body was wrapped in a flowing white robe, her golden curls perfectly arranged around her angelic face. The only thing to mar her perfection was her slightly open mouth, wide eyes, and creased brow. She was angry and confused. Henchman number one and henchman number two closed in on either side, and I knew this was the point where shit was about to get real. I had been living for the past few sun cycles in a bubble, not in the real world. I was not a soul. I was not equal to these people, and I was definitely overdue for some kind of knocking down from my imaginary pedestal. Elowyn recovered her composure, closing the distance between us. Her hands were trembling minutely. Somehow I could see that, along with the fine beading of sweat across her brow. Why was she nervous? The two Abcurses who had still been sitting stood now, and the five of them did their wall of protection thing. Elowyn and the two men halted, like ground to halt, and suddenly I understood the sweat on her brow. She was afraid of them. Trying her best to hide her fear, she cleared her throat. "We received word of a dweller who was seated at a table in the dining area. Some dweller who was reported missing to us several sun cycles ago. She needs to come with us now for questioning and reassignment."
Reassignment? Yeah, right. Just sign me up to be kicked to death by Bolson.
Yale was the first to speak, which was no surprise to me.
"Elowyn, you should not concern yourself with this dweller. She's been assisting us for the past few sun cycles, and she's going to continue to assist us for the foreseeable future."
"You assigned her to us," Rome stated from beside him.
"She's ours now,"
Eris concluded, his golden eyes catching mine for a brief moment. Ignoring the emotions that stirred inside my chest, I remained sitting, pretending to be an invisible, stupid dweller. The torrent of words burst from Elowyn then, as though she couldn't keep them inside.
"We have rules for a reason. You change them for one dweller, and the rest of them are going to start wondering why they aren't allowed to sit with souls at dinner. Or go to class and learn with them. Our world works because everyone knows their place. The natural order. What would the gods think about this?"
The Abcurses took one look at each other, and then each of them lost their shit. Like, doubled over almost on the floor kind of laughing. I bit my lip to stop myself joining them, but it was probably the hardest thing that I had ever done. Finally, Cohen straightened. He rubbed a hand across his still broadly grinning face and said,
"Those gods don't give a single shit what you do here. As long as you keep the worship and the souls coming, they wouldn't care if you all decided to strip naked and have mass solar dweller sex parties."
Elowyn turned a shade of green, which had all of the Abcurses leaning back from her. And then, with a huff, she spun on her heel and stormed out of the dining room, her henchmen trailing behind her. Sirit's eyes were sparkling when he turned back in my direction, their gem-like nature very prominent.
"Never liked that committee. I think we should make it our aim to bring it down."
His brothers laughed and chimed in with their suggestions, and for a moment it was as if all of them had forgotten that I was in their midst, until suddenly they didn't. Chairs scraped as the five of them sat around me, and I had to admit, being the center of their attention had me squirming in my seat. So intense. Just so freaking intense. Eris must have mistaken my unease for upset. He leaned in closer to me.
"Don't worry about the Dweller Committee, Willa. We'll make sure they don't bother you. She knows that you're under our order now, and they rarely ever mess with us."
I had seen the dark look on Elowyn's face as she stormed off. Well, dark and queasy. She would not be letting this rest. She was going to wait until they let their guard down, and then she was going to destroy me.
"Do you think it's safe for us to leave rocks with the other dwellers?"
Eris asked the others.
"She's the clumsiest one I've ever seen, even by their usual low standards."
Yael didn't miss a beat.
"She'll be fine. No one will hurt her in the dweller dungeons. It's only above ground, where the souls are, that we need to keep an eye on her."
"Sitting right here, assholes." Five sets of eyes. Five identical smirks. In that moment, there was no mistaking that they were brothers, and that their mother was blessed with the gift of beauty.
Double bonus that she can just protect her thoughts and we can hear them. Sirit said, if anyone bothers you, just call for us, Rox. Okay?
Yep, sure, no problem. I nodded and worked very hard to conceal my next thoughts. I wasn't ready for them to know about the tiny problem of me not being able to be too far away from them. They would most likely regret taking me into their protection if they knew that I was going to be stuck to them like glue. Maybe I could sneak and hide in the supply closet near their rooms. Dwellers appeared around us then, each holding a plate of food. Somehow, even though it wasn't quite dinner time yet, they were feeding us. Well, the ab curses anyway. I saw more than one set of confused eyes and dropped jaws. No one quite knew what to make of me sitting right in the center of a pile of souls.
Stop.
Rome's deep voice thundered around the room.
You didn't serve Willa. She'll have the same, and some fresh water.
Some of the confusion turned to anger, and I could see that more than one dweller wanted to question Rome, but they knew better. They knew their place, and they probably didn't want to get crushed. I was the only one stupid enough to end up in a situation like this, one which could tear apart the very fabric of the world we lived in. Elowyn hadn't been wrong. This could change everything. Damn Ra'u. Was this exactly what he was hoping for when he bound me to the boys? He was the god of chaos after all, and this was bound to get chaotic. As we ate, I was trying my best to breathe and somehow still stuff as much of the delicious food into my mouth as I could. Top of my list for hating souls was that they got to eat all the best food. Fresh produce, meat from fine cuts, even regular berries and sweet ice. I glared at Cullen, who was on my right side, and hooked my arm around my small cup of pink ice as a barrier.
What?
He asked, lifting one eyebrow with a sardonic stare.
Do you really think I'm going to steal your dessert?
My eyes flicked between all of them briefly, and I tucked the small dish even closer to my chest. I won't let you have it. This is my crushed ice. I will end anyone who touches it. There was a gasp from behind me, and I spun, with ice in hand, to find Emmy standing there. Her normally golden features were pale, and she looked tired and a touch thinner than the last time I had seen her.
Willa!
It was a whisper of my name, but it still drew the attention of the souls who were around us. Dinner time was starting now, so the room was slowly filling.
Willa!
She screeched this time, and now every single face was turned in our direction. My best friend glanced around, her eyes darting frantically. She knew she shouldn't draw attention to us like this, but she couldn't seem to stop herself from reaching out and latching onto my arm.
Here we go again.
I was hauled out of the room by her super muscles, and as soon as we were outside, and the doors closed again, she let me have it.
I have been going out of my mind with worry. 2 full sun cycles, Will. 2! You just vanished. I thought you were dead, that the ab curses took you off with them and dumped your body in the forest. How could you do this to me? I thought we were best friends. I thought we were family.
I was trying to listen to her while also hoping an explanation would come to me, one which would make sense to her. I needed to comfort her because it was killing me to see her so distraught, but I could scarcely concentrate around the pain in my chest. It was okay, not at dying level yet, but it was making it hard to focus. Emmy, I finally started, cutting her off mid-rant. I'm so sorry for disappearing on you, and trust me, it was not my decision. I would never have left you without telling you first, if I had had a choice. Something happened with the ab curses. Well, we ended up a long way from the center ring and had to walk back. What else could I tell her? I had no idea who was listening, and there was no safe place to talk about the gods and what had happened in Topia. She opened and closed her mouth, looking like she was gulping for air, but maybe she was trying to speak and couldn't get around her shock. I waited patiently, my hand now on my chest, as I rubbed it in slow circles. It didn't ease the pain. If anything, the pain was getting worse. Crap! The ab curses had finished their meal and were leaving the dining area, which meant that they were probably going to their rooms. It looked like we were about to test out the distance I could handle. My head spun as the sharp stabbing sensation in my chest increased. It was almost like my heart was being pulled through my ribs, shredding it in the process.
Willa, are you even listening to me?
Emmy must have started talking again, but I missed what she said. Her eyes were narrowed on me now, the color darkening.
Are you okay, Will? You don't look good.
I crouched forward and narrowly missed vomiting on her shoes. All of my delicious dinner was exiting my body, and that was about to be the worst thing to have happened to me this week, including being hit with a god bolt.
Willa, what can I do?
We need to get you to a healer. I shook my head, stumbling away from her, my hands raised, like I could keep her back. I didn't want her making a grab for me. She'd use her super muscles to drag me off to the nearest healer, and unless it was in the direction of the ab curses, there was a good chance that it would actually kill me.
I'm sorry, Emmy.
I choked out through the pain, stumbling back into the dining room. They were moving fast. I could feel them now, drawing further and further away. I spun on my feet, narrowly missing a passing dweller, and sprinted through the dining hall toward the back doors. People jumped out of my way, but the furniture wasn't so intuitive. I smacked hard into the side of a table, which sent me spinning in the opposite direction. I went over a chair, and then my face was slamming into the ground. Dark spots flashed over my eyes, the pain seizing up my body into small convulsions. I could hear Emmy screaming my name. She was getting closer. I forced my head to clear, forcing my body to stop shaking as I drew myself to my feet. And then I was struggling toward the door again. There was a cut on my right leg, blood dripping down my calf. It reminded me that I wasn't wearing pants, only Rome's shirt, which admittedly looked like a dress, but still.
Will.
It was only a statement, not a question. An acknowledgement. I needed help, and my best friend was going to give it to me. She linked her arm through mine, and I leaned a good deal of my weight on her, raising a shaky finger to point toward the back door. She started to drag me that way, her head tucked down, and her stride purposeful, as though she would be able to trick the surrounding souls and dwellers into thinking that there was nothing out of the ordinary going on. It almost seemed to work, too. Some of them turned away from us, going back to their meals. We cleared the dining room, and I pointed again, showing Emmy the way to the Abcurse's dorm rooms. It was much faster with her than it was to walk on my own. I gained strength with each step, which meant that we were moving in the right direction, if nothing else. When we were in the hall outside their rooms, I tugged on Emmy's arm, and we stopped moving. I drew her to one of the supply closets, able to walk on my own now, and gently pushed her inside. We sent two of the cleaning carts into the hallway to make room, and then closed the door, sitting against it in the darkness.
"Well," she started again. "I'm okay,"
I sighed, dragging my hands over my face. "I need a bath and something to wash up my mouth, but I'm okay."
"You can tell me what's going on, or I can sing Leader Graham's stupid settlement anthem until your ears bleed. Your choice."
"Harsh," I cringed, but followed it with a laugh. It was almost nice to think about Leader Graham and all of his harebrained plots to make the dwellers more like the souls. Life had been much simpler then. I snuck into Topia, and then one of the gods, specifically the god of chaos, Rau, hit me with this weird smoke ball of light, and I think it did something to me. Also, I stabbed someone, but it was an accident. And I met this cool slave named Jeffrey. You would have liked her. She was a real stickler for rules. I'm pretty sure we become Jeffreys when we die. Just saying. I mean, it makes sense. They're only half of what we are. It's like the creator plucked them on their way to death and then set them in Topia, where they would have to continue to serve. For eternity. So when Teacher Marx told us that dwellers are destined to be slaves and have no further purpose outside of their slavery, he really wasn't kidding. You know what happens when a Jeffrey does something bad? They get sent to a banishment cave. They're bound to it. They turn into these creepy, twisted, shadowy things, and they just amass. There must be thousands of them in there, maybe more. Holy shit, I didn't have time to think about that until now.
You can stop rambling. I've processed the first thing you said.
Mind telling me why you snuck into Topia? Emmy's tone was dry, almost sarcastic, but there was a hint of hysteria to it. Well, technically I didn't want to. The Abcurses made me. They wanted me to steal a cup.
Who did the cup belong to?
Someone called D.O.D.? It was too dark to see Emmy's face, but she was frowning so hard now that I could almost sense it.
There isn't a god by that name, Will.
Yeah, that's what Jeffrey said, too. Oh, wait. Jeffrey said something about a sacred apple and the trophy of Stavini or Stavridi or Stav-something.
Stavidi?
The hysteria in Emmy's voice was definitely becoming prominent now.
The trophy of Stavidi? You stole the trophy of Stavidi?
I clapped a hand over her mouth, trying to muffle her shriek.
No,
I answered reflexively. Or yes, kind of, maybe. Why? She gave a muffled answer, and I realized that I was still holding my hand over her mouth. I pulled away, allowing her to speak again.
You don't know who Stefidia is, Willa? Seriously? You couldn't pay attention in class for even that much?
I knew it sounded familiar, I grumbled, feeling defensive. Is it the god of, food, or something? Emmy groaned, her head making a thudding sound as she knocked it back against the door.
It's the creator, the original creator, Stavidi, and Sacred Abel? He's the god of trickery. Definitely not someone you want to be messing with.
I didn't want to mess with any of them.
And yet, you stole from the creator, tricked the god of trickery, stabbed someone, probably someone important, probably the god of vengeance.
Do you think they know it was me?
Of course not. You're a dweller from the seventh ring of Manatzel.
Emmy suddenly launched herself onto me, hugging me tightly.
I'm so relieved. You're alive. You're... What was happening back there in the dining hall? And why the hell are we in a supply closet?
She drew back from the hug, a hand still on my arm. She shook me slightly, as though she'd be able to dislodge the answers from me by force.
Rose magic.
It knocked me out, and then when I woke up, there was this pain. I touched my chest, rubbing my fingers over the muted thud of pain that was still present, even now, though it was no longer trying to rip me apart. The further away from the ab curses I go, the more it hurts me. If I'm touching one of them, I don't feel it at all.
You need to tell them, she hissed out, panic riding her tone. Maybe they know.
They were there. They saw it happen. I don't want to tell them about this. It's enough that they can hear some of my thoughts, and that I have to follow them around during the daylight hours. I don't want them to find out that I need to be around them for the entire sun cycle. I don't even want to be around them all the time. I'm sick of them. I never want to see them again. Except Eris. He smells nice. And Rome, because he's so strong and I'm pretty sure not even Ra'u can get past him. I don't need the others. Except Sirit. I'm pretty sure he hates me, but he's really good at catching me, like just before I faceplant into something. But the others? I don't need them. Not at all. I paused, my brow furrowing. My mouth pursing. And then, I quickly blurted, except Cohen and Yale. Cohen is really good at making decisions, and if I leave out Yale, he'll probably hunt me the hell down and haunt me.
That's all of them,
Emmy interrupted smoothly. She didn't sound panicked anymore. Now she sounded like she was trying not to laugh. Chapter 11. After Emmy snuck some food into my closet, she disappeared to finish her chores. Chores which I had no chance of doing unless one of the Abkurs brothers decided to help me out with them. Instead, I sat in the dark, picking at a plate of normal dweller rock bread, my chest thumping painfully. When the world grew so quiet that I would have been able to hear a bird squawk from the forest, I knew night had fallen. I opened the door a crack, peering out. I looked one way, and then the other.
All clear, soldier.
The stress was reversing my mental development back to the games I used to play with Emmy when I was only 7 life cycles old. I'd had some kind of sick fascination with the Minotaur patrols, and I'd pretended to be one of them for a full life cycle, constantly arresting Emmy for walking too fast or too slow or too normally. Slipping down the corridor was difficult. It felt as though I had left my internal organs back in the closet, but just before the pain became unbearable, I reached the bathing chambers for that floor of dorms. I ran inside and slammed the door behind me, locking it securely. The faint drip of condensation echoed all around me, and steam assaulted my face, driving me back against the door for a moment. My senses were on overload, screaming out against the pain of being so far from the Abkurses. I fought my way past it, pushing off the door and heading into the steam. The wooden boards beneath my feet were damp and warm, sending comforting heat right up to my belly, somewhat easing the way the rock bread was now turning around, threatening to come back up. I had no idea what to expect from the bathing chamber, since the dweller chambers were in the dungeon, and the water ran cold. Up here, there seemed to be a series of rooms to walk through, a bathing experience. I entered the first room by passing beneath a wooden archway. There were several wooden cubes, all empty. I stared beyond the room through the next wooden archway. All that was visible was a fine mist, a spray of water that rained softly down from the ceiling. I guessed that the cubes were for the soul's clothes. I quickly whipped off Rome's shirt, stuffing it into the cube, and then I lost my boots, using one cube for each boot,
because why the hell not?
Next, I tore off Jeffrey's slave garb, flicking that onto the floor, because I broke into a soul bathing chamber and therefore I was a rebel of the worst kind. Might as well start acting like it. I stepped through the next archway, passing into the fine mist of water. It caressed my skin so softly, dripping condensation over my body. The water was very lightly scented, almost too lightly to detect. It must have had some kind of magical property, because I could feel it stripping me of dirt and stress. I pulled my hand up before my face, squinting at it in the dim light of a few wall sconces. The grime was running out from beneath my fingernails, dripping right off my hand. I blinked, bending over to check my feet. I was sure I had never been so damn clean in my entire life. I was pretty sure I had been born dirtier than the shower was now making me. Maybe it was taking a layer of skin off. Was that healthy? I had no idea. Also, I probably needed to rethink that last thing I just thought, because babies weren't all that clean right after birth. I was just beginning to wonder if I should move on when the spray turned off. The next archway was now visible to me, and I stepped toward it, dripping along the ridged wooden floorboards. The steam assaulted me again, but stronger this time. It crept along my skin, making me break out into an immediate sweat. But it was nice, a nice kind of sweat. Almost like the magical bathing chamber was now cleansing me from the inside. There were a few more wooden cubes stuck along one of the walls, piles of cloth stacked within. I wandered over, grabbed what looked like a hem of fabric, and extracting what appeared to be a robe, without sleeves of any kind. I pulled it up over my chest, marveling at the whisper of cloud-like material. It barely seemed to weigh on my skin at all. It did stick to the sweat, though, forming a second skin around my chest, stomach, and thighs as I wrapped it around, tying it off beneath my arms. It ended around my knees, so I supposed that on male soles it would be fairly short. And that was when I realized that I was wearing it wrong. It clearly wasn't supposed to be tied off at the chest. It was supposed to be tied off at the waist, because male soles didn't have boobs. Whatever. Innovation, soldier. Leader Graham would be so proud of me. I sank down into the wooden bench that ran along the back of the room, my head thumping back against the wall. The steam was making me sleepy. I could almost ignore the pain. It had dulled so much that I barely even noticed it anymore. And it was getting better by the moment. It was almost... Crap! Take over, soldier! I scrambled up off the bench, but it was too late. Sirit spilled into the room, looking wet, clean, and pissed. His clothes were soaked through. His medley gold-black hair was now mostly black, sticking to his head and running rivulets of water over his face. Hey there, Five, I muttered.
Hey, soldier.
I jumped to my feet, my face and body heating, no doubt as red as a berry, which he hopefully wouldn't notice through all his steam. You've been listening to me. Sirit's eyes darkened as he took a moment to run them over my body. A really long moment. No doubt the white wrap hid about the same amount as Jeffrey's outfit. Still, for the same reason as last time, I didn't cover myself. Part of me sort of felt like I didn't have to with the Abcurses. They wouldn't take advantage. They wouldn't judge me. I wasn't sure if I had ever felt acceptance like that before. Then again, maybe it wasn't acceptance. Maybe it was apathy. Sirit stepped closer to me. My eyes were glued to the rivulets of water running through his dark hair. "Why did you come through the bathing rooms in your clothes?" I asked, because the silence was getting uncomfortable. He still wasn't saying anything, and I had no idea what I was supposed to do. He reached out then and wrapped his hand around the back of my neck, pulling me closer to his body before pushing me back down onto the seat and sitting next to me. His hardness pressed along one side of my fairly naked body, and together we remained like that for a long while, staring out into the steam room. His voice was a rumbling whisper when he finally spoke.
I felt your pain. You were hurting before I got here.
I had actually gotten pretty used to the chest-shredding thing that went on when I wasn't with them. Of course, now that Sirit was touching me, my body was able to relax in a way it couldn't when I was away from them.
You felt me?
Why was my voice all breathy and low? What was Sirit doing to me right now? This had to be some sort of soul gift, right? His trickery was messing with me.
I felt you, he confirmed,
his hand raising subconsciously, rubbing against a spot on his chest.
You were hurting, and now you're not.
I told the others we couldn't leave you alone. I'm fine. Well, I mean, I did trip and hurt my leg, and then I was dirty and needed to be clean. You know, the usual stuff. I had no idea why I was resistant to telling them about the painful codependence Raoul had created. Part of me wanted to try and figure out how to fix it before they realized what a thorn in the ass I was. Vibrations ran along my side, and I realized that Sirit was laughing. For some reason, this made me smile. I liked Sirit's laugh, and hearing it did things to me. Hot, swirly things. Finally, he stood and hauled me up onto my feet.
Come on, soldier. Let's check out your leg and make sure you're clean.
Sweet gods of Topia. His voice did that growly thing again.
I heard that rocks. I'd prefer it if you didn't offer any sort of exclamations to those assholes.
Why do you hate them? I asked, as he led me from the steamy room. I still don't understand how you five even figured out how to get into Topia. And why weren't they afraid of Raoul? At no point during the entire threat and attack thing Raoul had going on did any one of the Abcurses show 1 ounce of concern that he would smite them into dust. Their confidence was pretty amazing. And annoying. I hadn't actually expected Sirit to answer, but oddly enough, he did spill something.
The gods are not as deserving of worship as you people like to think. They have weaknesses, fears. They fight and bicker amongst themselves about the stupidest things. Raoul doesn't scare us. He's powerful, of course. All of the originals are. But he has one big problem. He's one of the only original gods without a beta, and no one really knows why there has never been a soul to step into the role.
His pause was heavy, and I had to ask,
Are you sure you don't know why?
Sirit glanced down at me, a flash of white teeth shining in my direction.
Personally, I believe that someone is manipulating things so that chaos doesn't get out of hand. Raoul does enough damage on his own. Of course, having no beta leaves him weaker and more vulnerable. The only thing ensuring his dominance is the fact that chaos is the natural order of the world. His power grows by the simple act of you all living.
So if he got a beta, then... I trailed off as the horror of what the world might look like washed over me.
Yes, complete and utter destruction of everything you're used to. He would burn this world to the ground in a bid to gather enough power and take down the other original gods.
So that's what he wants? To destroy the other originals? We were back in the first room now. Sirit grabbed something from a small shelf before leading me out into the hallway. I shivered slightly, as a cool breeze caressed my mostly naked and damp skin, before jumping when the soul draped a warm towel across my shoulders.
You have to stop walking around naked, Rocks. You'll catch a cold and die. Dwellers are delicate like that.
Yeah, right. I'd ended up naked and freezing more times in my life than was even possible to count. It was almost my state of natural being at this point. So, Raoul, endgame? Destroy the OGs? Sirit shook his head at me.
No, his endgame isn't to destroy the OGs. He wants to take out the Big Daddy.
Staviti! Thank you, Emmy, for making sure that I knew things.
You know Staviti?
Sirit suddenly looked darker, and a hell of a lot more menacing than he had 2 clicks before the conversation had started.
That's not possible. No dweller has seen him in several hundred life cycles.
He was half muttering to himself, but I wasn't paying that much attention because there was suddenly a mountain in the hallway. Rome strode up to us, and in a move which completely stunned the crap out of me, dropped to his knees right before me. What the actual freak? I was about to hyperventilate, or faint, or do something stupidly inappropriate, when his hand gently prodded the graze on my leg.
What happened to you, Rocks?
With him on his knees, we were basically at eye level. His eyes were so green that it was hard to stare directly at them.
Did someone hurt you?
I shook my head frantically. It seemed to be the only movement I was currently capable of. No, 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 no. Sirit laughed.
You should scribe a book. You're so good with words.
I recovered some of myself, enough to be able to turn and glare at him, before turning back to Rome, only to find he was already on his feet, towering over me again. I'm fine, I said, managing to get those 2 words out without stuttering or repeating myself. I should get back to my room. I knew it was stupid. I literally couldn't leave their sides, but the small part of me, which had always been alone, independent, a misfit, needed to prove to myself that I could make it without the Abcurses. Like I needed to know when they decided to turf me out like trash that I'd be okay. shredded heart and all. Turning, I stomped off down the hallway, half dreading that someone was going to stop me. I had no idea what I was going to do once I reached the end of the hall. There was no way to jump into the supply closet while they were watching me. Were they still watching me? I turned my head as minutely as I could to see behind me. Five figures. Everyone was there for the show this time. Damn them. Since I hadn't been watching where I was going, and the agony in my chest was increasing, I missed seeing the small cart which was waiting in the hallway for the morning shift of room-cleaning dwellers to grab it. I tripped. Of course I did. Right onto my face. I heard some snorts of laughter from behind, and the distant sound of Yale saying,
"Half a click. Told you. You owe me 100 tokens.
It didn't surprise me that Yale had found a way to turn that into a competition. As I lay there, breathing in the dirty floor smell, some dweller was really letting the team down in this hall. Probably that dweller was me, but whatever. I heard their footsteps as the five of them closed in on me. I groaned and lifted my head just enough to thump it back against the floor. It's going to be impossible to hide this from them any longer. Resigning myself to the fact, I rolled over onto my back. Eris wrapped his golden hands around my biceps and hauled me to my feet.
"What can't you hide from us any longer?"
he asked when I was standing again. The quiet and semi-darkness of the hall enveloped our group, and I could have been mistaken, but it seemed like the boys were looking a little wary of me, standoffish almost, which was good. I needed them to be cold because otherwise I got flustered and forgot they were leagues above me, members of the blessed soul realm.
"Rox," Yale prompted. "Don't make me use my persuasion on you. I've been going easy with you, but I can make you tell me."
Oh, hell to the no. He did not just say that, right? My rage must have been clearly reflected across my face because I saw a few of them exchange a nervous glance before they took a step away from me. Not even a sacred soul was immune to the effects of a pissed-off woman. Lifting my finger, I jabbed it right into Yale's hard chest. It hurt like hell, and he even caught my wince, so I decided to use their own tactics of intimidation against them. I drew myself to my full, miserable height and pushed myself closer to him.
"Don't ever use your gift on me, soul," I growled. "Dwellers are not playthings. We might have drawn the unlucky hand on this piece of crap world, but we are not nothing."
I jabbed him harder, hoping like hell his rock-hard chest didn't break my finger.
"Not nothing."
His face was like stone, stone which had been carved and molded by the very gods themselves. I knew I couldn't blink, that I had to maintain my serious stare, or I would fail at this competition which had arisen.
"Competitive shit, soul."
Yale was such a pain with this stuff, and yet I sort of thought it was awesome at the same time. My left eye started to twitch, my fingertip aching from being pressed so hard.
"You sure you don't want to step back, Rox?"
Yale's hypnotic voice rolled over me, and I knew he wasn't hitting me with the full force of his power, yet he still affected my will. Gritting my teeth hard enough to crack them, I didn't blink or move or speak. I continued with the battle of wills that I was determined to win. Then he kissed me. Before I even saw him coming, his lips were on mine, and I pulled tightly against his body. I lost all time and space, my breathing cut off as my head spun. Before the pressure could deepen, Yale stepped away from me, and I barely managed to remain on my feet.
"I win,"
he said, turning and strolling away, all casual, like he hadn't just kissed the hell out of me.
"You cheated," I shouted after him.
My eyes flicked between the other four.
"He cheated."
Sirit shook his head.
"What did you expect? He fights sturdy. We all do."
I was breathing really deeply, almost embarrassingly deeply. Just a kiss. My body was reacting like I just run up and down the steps to Blesswood a few hundred times. I wanted to go after Yale, probably to smack him in the face, since the chest poking had done nothing. I should use a knife or something next time, get all badass and soul-like. Cohen distracted me by stepping in at my back, his giant form crowding over me and wiping all Yale revenge thoughts from my mind. I could see flickers of fire and the promise of pain in his eyes. But maybe I was just hallucinating because Yale's kiss had fried my mind. His hand dragged along my arm, and with it came these strange little sparks of energy. They hurt, sort of, but but they also felt good. Like he was igniting all of the receptors along my skin, bringing my body to life. I almost missed his words, my eyes glued to the hand trailing my arm.
Willa.
His deep voice caught my attention.
We all have to be up early tomorrow for the moon cycle trials in the arena. The gods will be sitting on their pampered asses expecting us to perform like street monkeys, which means you have exactly one click to tell us what you're hiding from us.
I looked down at my feet, trying to block him out. His hand moved again, drawing those strange, aching sparks over my skin. My breath shuddered out, my eyes closing. His grip suddenly shifted, the light brushing motion disappearing as his fingers curled around my arm, just above my elbow. He pulled roughly, forcing me against his chest. His free hand fell to the back of my head. Is he hugging me right now? Someone snorted, and Cohen's chest vibrated with a laugh that he quickly cut off.
Talk, Willa, he demanded.
Maybe it was the hug, or maybe it was the small spark of pain that accompanied his words, flashing low against the base of my spine. But I suddenly wanted to tell them everything. I twitched a little bit, but mostly clamped down on my reaction to Cohen's gift, because my reaction was to jump him, and that was hardly appropriate. Did you guys do something? My voice was muffled against Cohen's chest, but I refused to turn my head and look at the other three.
What was that?
Eris asked, moving behind me, seeming almost to gravitate toward me. I suspected that he was attracted to the desire swirling through me right now. Yale had lit the match. Cohen was deliberately stoking the fire, and Eris was the moth, drawn to the flame. I could feel him pressing against my back, his chest brushing my shoulders, his hand curving around the front of my neck. My eyes drew closed before I could stop them, and my legs were suddenly weak, my head spinning dizzily.
She's going to drop, I heard Sirit drawl.
Cohen's chest rumbled again, and this time the spark of pain was somewhere in the vicinity of my chest, forcing my eyes back open and my breath to catch.
Don't start acting like a dweller now, Willa, Cohen mumbled.
Eris's hand moved against my neck, applying just enough pressure to pull my head back against his chest, and then I was staring right up into Cohen's face. The green in his eyes had disappeared completely, leaving only darkness and violence. It was pitch black, closing in around me, drawing me away from the world. Did you all do something to save me back at the cave? I heard my own voice, but it didn't even feel like it was me speaking. I had drifted out of my body and into the darkness of Cohen's soul.
No,
someone answered. Sirit, I thought.
Why? What happened, Rox?
Now, I need to tell you all, I muttered. Dual growls vibrated through me, and I quickly amended the statement. I need to be near at least one of you, ever since the cave. It hurts me, here. I tried to raise my hand to my chest, but Cohen and Eris must have pushed me closer. Every inch of my body seemed to be plastered up against hard muscle. When I raised my arm, it only bumped against Cohen's massive chest. He refused to back up.
Where?
Sirit asked, sounding frustrated.
Guys, seduction, pain, get the fuck off her so I can concentrate.
Eris pulled away so fast that I almost suspected him to have been yanked off by Sirit, but when Cohen spun me around so that I was facing the other way, Sirit was still standing in the same place, and Eris was striding down the hall toward his dorm room. He disappeared inside, the door slamming violently behind him.
And then there were two.
Sirit rolled his eyes. Two? I muttered, looking around for Rome, who also seemed to have disappeared. Cohen's hands were wrapping around my arms from behind, still holding me close to him.
I'm taking her to my room, Cohen announced, ignoring my question. Tell the others to get their shit together and meet us there. If we put some clothes on the dweller, we might actually be able to have a full conversation.
I snorted. The dweller can speak just fine, thanks. Okay, I lied. That was a lie. Cohen knew it, too. He only shook his head at me, marching me toward the last door at the end of the hallway. He didn't release me until we were inside, the door clicking shut softly behind us. I watched as he hunted through the drawers, pulling out a shirt and a pair of male sleep pants. They had been cut short for the summer season. I suspected they would have ended above the knee on Cohen, but for me they were almost a full set of pants. He handed everything to me and then jerked his head in the direction of the alcove at the other end of his bedroom. Siritz had been full of books, but Cohen's was mostly empty. Just a rug and a chair, facing the windows. It had a door, too. I stripped off and pulled on the fresh clothes, chuckling at how ridiculous I now looked, before moving back into the main room.
"What's so funny?" Rome asked me,
his eyes flicking over me once before settling on my face. He was probably just making sure that I was finally clothed. The others had all gathered, too, silently and rapidly, like smoke beneath the door. It was a little bit scary. "Nothing," I muttered, wandering over to their group. None of them were sitting down, but I was exhausted, so I sat on the edge of Cohen's bed, facing them all, and then I just blurted it out. "So, I feel sick and my chest hurts whenever I move away from you all. It's really painful, like my chest is being ripped apart. When I move closer again, it gets better. With one of you touching me, it disappears altogether." I paused, drawing in a breath, and passing my eyes from one of them to another. They were all doing that scary blank expression thing. "All right." I drew out the word, twisting my hands together nervously. "I'm going to sleep now. I'm tired. See you all tomorrow." I jumped up, heading for the door.
"Trickery," someone muttered,
and a moment later there was a soul behind me. I glanced over my shoulder, catching the side of Sirit's profile, and then turned back to the door.
Ugh, whatever.
Sirit could follow me to the closet if he wanted to. Unless this was the moment that they killed me.
"Overreact much?" Sirit laughed,
pulling me toward his dorm room.
"You're staying with me tonight. The others, they need a bit of time to process."
"Are they angry?" I asked, as Sirit pushed me gently from one room to another.
"Very,"
he answered cheerily. "Why aren't you angry?" I scowled, spinning around to face him as he started pulling items off the only couch in his room.
"Rocks, my gift is trickery. I love surprises, especially surprises that annoy people. Especially surprises that annoy my brothers. Especially surprises that spend half of their time naked. A naked surprise is always a good surprise."
I didn't really know what to say to that. He kind of had a point. He swept me up, mid-yawn, carrying me over to the bed and dumping me right in the middle of it, before leaning over me to steal one of the pillows.
"See you in the morning, soldier," he said with a wink.
Chapter 12. As soon as my eyes drifted closed, sleep claimed me. I was wrenched immediately into a dream, in which I managed to grow into something twice my size, with massive limbs and hands the size of my face. Manly hands. What the hell?
"That can't have been Raoul's intention,"
my voice growled out, sounding far too much like Rome's voice for comfort. My eyes rose, meeting the eyes of three others, Yale, Eris, and Cohen.
"Holy freak, I'm inside Rome's head."
"No, that was impossible. Calm down, Willa. It was just a dream. A harmless dream."
"There's only one explanation."
Cohen was shaking his head, looking angrier, darker than I had ever seen him.
"Whatever his magic was, it was meant for one of us, not a dweller. You know they react differently to magic. They're so fragile."
"It should have killed her,"
Yale said. The words like an accusation, but there was confusion riding his tone, too.
"I think it ripped her soul apart,"
Cohen returned. "Whoa." I wanted to interrupt. "What? Excuse me, what?"
"I think so too."
Rome's voice carried seemingly from my mouth.
"And all of those pieces, they latched onto us. We somehow assimilated her. It shouldn't have been possible. Maybe it had something to do with Raoul's magic. If it was designed specifically for us, it would have sent the pieces of her soul toward us. It still would have tried to seek us out, even after it had shredded her."
Shredded. Ripped. Assimilated. Pieces. It was hard to believe they were talking about me. It sounded like they were talking about a rag doll.
"I don't like this,"
Yale snarled, beginning to pace.
"Try being me, buddy."
"None of us do,"
Cohen snapped back.
"And I bet she hates it even more than we do."
"Correct for once." Rome laughed.
"No shit. She doesn't even seem to realize that she's a dweller. There's not an ounce of accepting or obedience in her."
The other smiled, momentarily, before the stormy expressions rolled back over their faces.
"We need to do something,"
Eris spoke up, his silky voice thoughtful.
"Maybe we can sneak her back into Topia."
"It's too risky,"
Cohen shook his head. Eris grunted out in agreement.
"Well, maybe we can get a message to Breena. If anyone is able to reverse this curse, it'll be her."
The others nodded, and then they all seemed to fall into a thoughtful silence.
"Have you hidden the cup?"
Yeo finally asked, looking over at Cohen.
"Of course,"
was the bland reply.
"Think he's noticed it's missing yet?"
Eris asked.
"Of course."
This time, the reply was delivered with a flashing smile. Cohen's eyes glinted dangerously, a laugh falling from his lips.
"If he could curse us again, he'd do it. But you know DOD.
He laughed again, shaking his head.
"He's probably trying not to be proud, because we've finally managed to beat his sneaky ass at something."
Their laughter slowly faded away, and no matter how tightly I tried to hang on to it, it evaded my grasp, dwindling into soundless night as sleep dragged me further away. After that, my dreams were normal. I dreamt about sleeper bugs the size of my face, and tables piled high with delicious soul food. I even dreamt about Rome's bare chest for a little bit. I tried not to judge myself, as I then moved on to think about the others and the various images that they had planted into my poor little dweller brain. When I woke up in the morning, it was almost a relief, and I didn't feel rested at all. I suppose that there was another way that Rau's curse had changed me, another truth that I was hiding from the Abcurses. But they didn't need to know about the way my body misbehaved every time they touched me. I mean, nobody really needed to know about that. I shot up in bed, trying to wipe the guilty look off my face. Please don't have heard my thoughts. Luckily, Sirit was still asleep on the couch. I swung my feet to the ground and padded over to him, poking him in the shoulder. He didn't stir. I huffed out a nervous breath, sitting down on the low table beside the couch, notching my chin in my hand and poking him again, although the movement was pretty lazy this time. His gold-tipped hair was swept to the side, curling slightly against the pale pillow beneath his head. He was actually kind of beautiful when he wasn't insulting me. He cracked one eye open, the cat-like irises flashing with warring green and yellow gold. His other eye cracked open while I just stared at him, trying to dredge up the words to explain that I hadn't just been sitting there, watching him sleep, like a creep. His arm shot out, curving around me and pulling me off the table and onto his chest.
"Go back to sleep," he muttered,
his voice gravelly.
I
turned my head to the side, so that his chest wasn't smothering me. "No." He reached around my face, holding his hand over my mouth.
"Yes. Shh."
I tried to wiggle out of his arms, but Rome decided to choose that moment to barge into the room. Sirit cracked one of his eyes open again, and I twisted around just enough to see Rome's eyebrows inching up, his massive arms crossing over his chest.
"At least you're not naked," he said to me,
before turning his eyes on Sirit, his expression melting into a glare.
"Let's go. We need to be at the arena in 3 clicks.
3?
Sirit launched off the couch, sending me tumbling. And of course, since the clothing I wore was about 5 sizes too large, most of my butt managed to fall out of the pants. Rome grinned.
"I spoke too soon."
Cohen, Yale, and Eris chose that moment to barge through the door of Sirit's room. I frantically scrambled to get my pants up and shirt down. Why do these things always happen to me? Why? Eris crossed over to me, leaning over to offer me a hand up. I froze as the full length of his body came into view.
Whoa.
His goldenness was extra blinding. He was dressed in some sort of battle gear which consisted of a gold-tinted breastplate, armbands, and braces over the front of his thighs. I knew my jaw had fallen open, but he looked like a warrior. Or a god. A really hot warrior god.
Wrenching my gaze from his, I placed my hand into his outstretched one, my eyes catching on to the other Abcurses.
They all wore similar armor, in shades which complemented their natural coloring.
They're going to be gods.
I had absolutely no doubt that these 5 were on the path to Topia. But how are they going to do that with me attached like an ugly 6th limb?
"Don't you worry about it, Rox,"
Eris said as he deposited me safely to my feet,
Our path to Topia was rocky long before Rau decided.